This talk was given at Insight Meditation South Bay. For more information and a schedule of our events, visit the Insight Meditation South Bay website at www.imsb.org. For information about online programs, visit the Bodhi Courses website at www.bodhicourses.org. Bodhi is spelled B-O-D-H-I.
Am I on? Yes, I'm on now. I can hear it. This is by Mary Oliver from one of her books of poetry called House of Light. And it's entitled The Buddha's Last Instruction. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness, to send out the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees, and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward. It thickens and settles over the fields around him. The villagers gathered and stretch forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs, detached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly, I'm not needed. Yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. Make of yourself a light. It's a good purpose for a life. We can be a light anywhere we are. And as my Pickens County grandmother would say, my goodness, honey, it's worth doing. And that's certainly a deep purpose of practicing, all this difficult practice of sitting and watching our minds and seeing how weird and crazy our thought pattern is and how challenging it is to quiet our mind and be present, even when we're sitting on a cushion and we have nothing to do but sit and be present. Yet our mind wanders, let alone throughout the day. When I'm in conversation with someone and they're boring me or I don't like what they're saying and I'm pretending to listen while I'm off in my head somewhere, waiting for them to pause so that I can hop in with something relevant and important as opposed to the chatter that they're giving. Make of yourself a light. I think about my little three-year-old grand, as we call them in South Carolina, Bella, Isabella Pearl Lucina. She is definitely a light. And she knows it, and she's very happy to share it. And somehow along the way, we lose that. Our light dims. It falls under the control of our uncontrollable mind. And what the Buddha offered to us was how to return our minds to that childlike place of making ourselves a light, but to do it with skill and awareness, rather than simply innocent nature. And one of his most important sets of teachings for doing that was the seven factors of awakening, or the seven factors of enlightenment. He was very skilled at offering lists to guide practice, because there was no written word like we have now. And so it was a mnemonic for memory. However, it could not have worked if it had not fit with the way our minds work. He understood so precisely and so clearly and brilliantly because of his deep practice. He discerned exactly the way the mind works, so that he could illuminate it for us in order to make of ourselves a light. And it's said that the heart of the Dharma, the heart of the teachings, are two particular lists that he made. One, the five hindrances, doubt, aversion, sleepiness, restlessness, etc. And the seven factors of awakening. And the seven factors of awakening are designed to remove those hindrances. My 95-year-old mom is in the hospital in Charleston, South Carolina. And she's quite upset with the fact that the dish television system at the rehab center doesn't have MSNBC. And she can't watch Rachel Maddow. She and I are the only Democrats in the conservative Southern Baptist family that I grew up in. And she's at the stage of her life where clearly there's not much time left for her. She's fortunate to still have considerable amount of marbles in her head. She's very clear and strong. However, her mind is totally out of control. She has no awareness of how much it drives her. She is very out of sorts because now she's not at home where she had a routine and she could do as she wished. Now she's in a rehab center at the mercy of people coming in out of the room to help her and take care of her. And because her mind is so out of control, she suffers. She can't find peace. And that's what's ahead for us, unless we practice. And one particular way to practice is through the seven factors of awakening. It's difficult and not an easy thing to do. And tonight, we're talking about the fifth one, tranquility. There was a particular time in my young lawyer life where I had begun practice for a few years, but it certainly wasn't a very deep practice. And my law partner in Charleston, this was after I left the public defender, and I hung out for a year or so being a hippie, and my landlord was a state senator, and he convinced me to become his law partner. And we were pretty good law partners for a number of years. And during that time, I was really pulled between dedicating myself to the practice of law and dedicating myself to waking up. And in the late 70s and early 80s, the idea of waking up in Charleston, South Carolina, was mostly about how hungover I would be the next morning from waking up. It wasn't the kind of waking up that the Buddha was talking about with his seven factors of awakening. So I was in this great tension with Joe, I'll call him my law partner, because Joe's still alive being a lawyer in Charleston. His wife is a judge. And so we were in some definite degree of tension because I devoted too much of my time, from his perspective, to practice and not enough to being a lawyer. And at one of these times of tension, Joe had served in Vietnam. I had been in the Army during Vietnam, but I managed to avoid Vietnam. Joe was a tank commander in Vietnam. And the impact was fierce for him. And I'll never forget one Friday morning, I was at my desk early on Broad Street in Charleston, and in comes Diane, who was our associate and Joe's girlfriend. We had a series of associates who were Joe's girlfriend. He was, this was definitely before the At Me Too, and Joe was definitely troubled in that way, for sure. But she came in, she was quite distraught, and she had a long legal-sized yellow pad, and it was about a 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 page handwritten note from Joe, the bottom line of which was, I've taken all the money and I've left and you'll never see me again. There was not much tranquility in reading that note. And there was not much tranquility with Diane, because she was not only overcome by this news, but she had the additional pressure of loving him and being distraught about him in many, many ways. So the wonderful thing about practice is it's not just practice on the cushion. Life gives us opportunities to put it into practice in our lives. And if we think for a moment that our practice is just about on the cushion, we're missing what the Buddha really wanted to offer us. I promise you, even though I was very new to practice, I did not have any tranquility then. There was no tranquility in my life for a good while. How do we bring it then? The Buddha, just quickly, especially for those of you who have been to the other four series in this series, the first factor of awakening is mindfulness, and that's kind of the grounding factor. We bring mindfulness to our practice and we practice mindfulness. We practice observing our mind when it's present, when it's not present. We use the breath as an anchor. That's a good focus. It can also be other things, a visual focus or a particular mantra or saying. Focus. The breath is the classic Buddhist focus. The long breath, the short breath, the full breath, the shallow breath, where our mind goes with those breaths. And as we quieten over time, especially in long retreats, as our mindfulness gets strong, we don't have a lot of distractions. You will observe that your mind is able to investigate what's happening with it. Why does this distract me? What happened when I suddenly left And I don't know how many minutes went by, how many breaths went by, and I returned. What is this anxiety in my mind? What is this cloudiness? What is this restlessness? We begin to investigate the different ways that our mind goes away. We disappear. What are the thought structures that arise and take me away, that I get hooked by? There are particular themes that I have seen in my own mind. Where do I get caught in my body and start worrying about my body, and my body's falling apart, and I'm getting old, and I'm getting too fat, or I'm too skinny, or whatever our body is pulling us. So we investigate. And if you think about it, this is also the way life works. When we're in a situation that arises, that's a problem in our life, we get focused on it. Oh, I don't have any money in the bank. I got to pay my bills. We get very mindful and very present. And then we start investigating what I can do to correct the situation. I'm having difficulty with my boss or my coworkers at work. We become focused on investigating it. Now, it might be in a little, not very clear way, but our practice helps us to be more clear in that, rather than just, if it's a problem at work, rather than just gossiping and complaining. As we built some mindfulness in the Buddhist sense, and we investigate, we start looking at our own contribution to that upset at work. And we start investigating how others and our reaction to others are contributing to that. So it's the natural flow of the mind. And that investigation brings energy, because we're focused on solving the problem. And that is naturally energizing. It might be a struggle at first, and we might wander off and do too much gossiping at first, but as we settle down and get some advice, we get energy, we seek counseling, we seek help, perhaps we seek a mediator to come in and help us at work. As that investigation happens and we get energy, we begin to feel better. Have you noticed that when you're tackling a problem in your life? When you stop just complaining about it, you bring some focus to it through your mindfulness, you start to investigate how to solve the problem, you get some energy, and you start to feel better. You're not under this dark cloud of despair. You begin to feel better. That's just the natural way life works. And so the Buddha taught us the natural way life works in our minds, in our practice, as well as in our life. So mindfulness brings some clarity where we can investigate what's going on to understand more clearly. That brings us some energy. We start to feel better. In the meditation sense, that's called joy or even rapture. The Sanskrit word is piti. And that's a very beautiful feeling in a retreat where the mind gets still enough. You've investigated, you've calmed down, you've gotten some energy, and you start to feel light and joyful, and a happiness arises. What then flows is tranquility. Things begin, that energy that might be getting a little high and a little busy is calmed by that joy, and calm and tranquility arises. That's the way the mind works. So it's not a matter of mysticism. The Buddha never asked us to take this on faith. This practice is not about believing. It's not, in that sense, truly a religion. It's really a practice. It's like a good computer programmer knows exactly how a computer works and how to align software with the way a computer worked. The Buddha discovered in his years of diligent practice exactly how the mind works. And these stages, the factors of awakening, are an expression, a guide for us so that we can recognize those stages as they show up in our practice. In order to do that, however, we have to pay attention to life that's around us. We have to bring mindfulness not just on the cushion, but in our everyday life. When we're present with people, when we're talking to them, am I being mindful then? Am I investigating what's arising in my relationship with this person? Am I just off in my head thinking about what I'm going to do next, not being connected, not being present? That's an investigation. Oh, I'm not really listening to my mother. I'm not really listening to Dana, my wife. No wonder she's getting a little agitated. I have investigated what's going on. I brought mindfulness and said, oh, Daniel, wake up. Pay attention. And when I do that, I get energized. And as I connect with Dana, and I feel her presence and my presence, then there's a joy that arises. And if we've been in a tussle, it starts to calm, and that brings tranquility and ease. So this is a moment-to-moment in your life practice that is enhanced by the time you spend on the cushion understanding, oh, this is what's happening in my practice. I'm getting sleepy because I lost my mindfulness. Let me come back to the breath. Let me stay with the in-breath. Let me notice the very detailed quality of my breath. Is my breath kind of shallow today? Is it relaxed and long and full? Is my breath going throughout my whole body? Can I feel it in my whole body? Or am I just up in my head? Can I bring myself fully into my body? That kind of practice enables me to go in my work and into my relationships with that same awareness, so that off the cushion, it is useful to me in my life. Don't do it if it doesn't help in your life. What a waste of time. It's ridiculous. It's not just about sitting on the cushion. This is another Mary Oliver poem entitled, Don't Hesitate. If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, I would add parenthetically, or rapture, that's another way to describe it in a Buddhist way. She didn't use that word. Don't hesitate. Give in to it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise. And not very often kind. We are not wise and not very often kind. Because we aren't mindful, we don't investigate what's happening in a relationship, we're too quick, we're moving on, we're off in our head, self-focused. So there's no opportunity to create the energy of a real connection with the other beings in our life, and through that energetic connection, begin to feel joy and energy in the connection, and then tranquility, peace, calm arises. Just practice that tomorrow at work. Practice it tonight when you go home with those you live with who aren't into this practice. Bring these same elements consciously with intent and awareness into your relationships. And Mary Oliver goes on, "We are not wise and not very often kind, and much can never be redeemed. We've all made lots of mistakes, and some of them we can clean up and correct, and many of them we can't. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back, that sometimes something happens better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything. But very likely you notice it in the instant when love begins." Aha! So we're back to the factors of awakening again. We do notice when there's an opening of our heart, which is joy or rapture. Our heart opens and we feel that feeling that we call love, and there's connection. Tranquility follows it. Anyway, that's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb. Seize it, take it when it arises, and know that you can call it forth. We mostly go through life experiencing ourselves as at the effect of life. Life is doing it to me, or these people are doing it to me, or this situation is doing it to me, or my body is doing it to me, or my family did it to me and I just haven't gotten over it. Those stories that we have, powerless we are in the face of those stories. And not clearly seizing the very simple and clear teachings that the Buddha offered us about the way our minds work. And why is that connected to life? Because everything we know quite obviously and clearly is through our mind. We construct our world, each of us. And so why not choose to construct it in a lawful way of being mindful and aware all through your day tomorrow? And noticing that as you're mindful and aware, there's a natural curiosity. Oh, wonder why she acted that way towards me. Wonder why she responded in that way. Wonder why he didn't like my idea, rather than, what's wrong with her? Why is she acting that way? And he's just a jerk. Instead of those pronouncements that come from unmindfulness, we bring mindfulness and we then investigate with curiosity. And that curiosity will give us energy, because we want to find out. We're really curious, just like when we're reading a good book or watching a good movie. We get energy because we're curious how it's going to turn out. What's going to happen? How about the good book of our life, or just our day tomorrow? On February the 28th, 2018, bring mindfulness, the curiosity of investigation, into every element of your day tomorrow, and see what energy that brings to you, and subsequently what joy that brings to you. And through that joy, a peacefulness, a tranquility, a calm comes, because you'll discover that you are so present in your life, so awake and aware in each moment. That's what it's about. It's not just sitting on a cushion. I come from 9 generations of Southern Baptist ministers, and I was supposed to be one. And sometimes, you know, I just, yes. So, about 3 or 4 years ago, 4 years ago, I got a very difficult diagnosis called large diffuse B-cell lymphoma. That has a way of bringing mindfulness into your life, bringing attention. Oh, the big C word. Me? I've been a vegetarian. I've taken care of myself. Yes, I did inhale quite a bit back in the 60s. And I did take a few trips. Yeah, that might have had something. And I like a glass of wine or 2 or 3 sometimes. Yes. Oh, okay, here I am. So at a time like that in your life, you either get present or it's a real struggle. And I know that I will never forget the first time I went into the hospital for, I had chemotherapy in the doctor's office, but I had this really bad chemotherapy where they had to quarantine me in a part of the hospital. And the first weekend that I was there for it, I had this lovely gentleman who was from Scotland, my nurse. And he was in chatting as they had to get my blood at my electrolytes at a certain level before they could give me the chemo. And that took half a day or so. And he had been in and out checking on me, and we were having a nice conversation. And then he comes in and says, "Well, you're ready now. I've gotten the lab report." And he's carrying this bag of stuff, and it looks like to me it had 3 or 4 levels of plastic on it. And he was wearing a hazmat suit. Literally, a hazmat suit. You know, the whole thing. Big gloves and boots and everything. And I go, "Oh, shit." He's going to shoot me up with that. And he's protecting himself from even touching a bag that's 4 layers thick. Wow. Now, can you bring investigation to that? Mindfulness to that? I was so grateful for my practice because that's what arose for me. Wow, I need to be really present now because fear is arising. Pain is definitely already present. That's interesting. And notice what's happening to my mind. Investigate. Wow, this is amazing. He's wearing a hazmat suit and he's going to put that inside me. Wow, that's an interesting. So our practice in those times can calm and bring tranquility. And I assure you, I don't know how I would have gotten through it, but for that. My heart goes out to people who have to go through that and don't have 30 years of meditation practice. 40, no, 50. Yeah, 50. And I'm still a beginner for sure. So there are turbulent mental waves, like wind across a lake, often arising from self-judgment. In that case, it wasn't so much self-judgment as it was, why me? How did I get in this place? And we could get angry, we project out, we don't take it and investigate build the energy from that investigation so that we can find the joy in wherever we are and then the peace and tranquility that comes from it. And I didn't know any of this back in the early 80s when Joe took all the money. Literally, he did. He took everything out of all the bank accounts, even our escrow account for our clients. Life, it's so many surprises. And eventually he came back. He had gone to Israel, he was Jewish, and he had gone and tried to join the Israeli army through a general who was a friend of his that he had met in his political travels. And the general realized that he had lost it. So he took him in and he stayed there for 6 months while Diane and I sort of put things back together and kept going. And then he came back. And it was very difficult because we had to split everything up and he was very angry at me. This was all my fault. And I'm sure if you have had a similar breakup of a business or breakup of a marriage or a family breakup, those kind of projections are normal. You know, it's all about you. You did everything wrong. And the other person, yeah, but it's all about you. You did everything wrong. Thank goodness for my practice. I didn't take it that way. We just sat down and worked it out. And he took this bill, and I took this bill, and he took that client, and I took that client. And we worked it all out. And a year or so went by, and I hadn't really have much contact with him. Diane and I were in contact frequently. And one day, the phone rings, and it's Joe. And I say, surprised, hello. And he says, you know that $5,000 that we owe our accountant, Bill? And I said, yeah. You agreed to take that bill because Bill was also his campaign finance person for his Senate races. And he said, yes, I know I did, but I'm not going to take it anymore. You have to pay him half. And he slammed down the phone. Now just put yourself in that situation and think about the factors of awakening. Are you mindful? Are you mindful of your anger? Are you mindful of how unnerving that is? And then can you begin to investigate? And I don't know how I managed to do it, but I did. Because he and Diane had subsequently, in the meantime, they had gotten married. And I wasn't invited to the wedding, no surprise, since all of this was my fault. So I thought, how can I get through this and find my way to tranquility and peace? I know what one door is, the door of getting upset and angry and blaming him. I've already been down that road for a while, and that didn't get me anywhere. So that's an investigation. I know how that was deadening for me. I know how that didn't create joy, it created worry, and it definitely didn't bring tranquility, calm, or peace. So what can I do? My daughter, Isabella Pearl, Lucina's mother, had just turned 5, and her mom and I had a gorilla come to her 5th birthday party. And all of her little friends loved this gorilla. And the gorilla, we lived on the ocean at the beach, and the gorilla chased them around the house and down to the beach, and they just had the best time. It was really wonderful. So I thought, So I went to the card shop, and I got a couple of cards, and I sat down at my typewriter, and I first typed a letter to Bill, our accountant, and I said, "Dear Bill, please find enclosed a check for $2,500. You know that Arnold, Joe, sorry, I'm trying not calling by his name. Joe agreed to take this bill, but he just informed me that he is not going to pay you, and I don't want you caught in this. So enclosed is a check." And I made a copy of that letter. And I then got a wedding card. And I wrote a second letter, which was to thank Joe for all the things that he had given me over the many years of our relationship. That was an investigation. I brought mindfulness to that part of my life, and I investigated how I could bring tranquility and peace. And it was a wonderful exercise because my mind would offer up how angry I was and how inappropriate this was and how I had stood by him when he had gotten pulled over for drunk driving and represented him, and when he got in trouble with the South Carolina Bar Association and all those difficulties we had gone through. So there was a tussle in my mind. However, I wanted tranquility and peace. So I made that letter of thanking him for all the things he had done. And then I put that letter and a copy of the letter to Bill, our accountant, into a card congratulating him and Diane on their wedding that had happened 6-9 months before. And I wrote a congratulations to him, and I said, "Enclosed is your wedding present." And I wrapped that all up, and I picked up the phone, and I called my gorilla. And I said, "Do you know Senator Joe?" And he says, "Yes, I know him." Of course, he's on television all the time. And I said, "I have a delivery that I want you to take to his office. And I want you to go as Gorilla." And he said, "Oh, great." And I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure that cost me $20 for him to come and get it and pick it up, which he was very happy to do. And I said to him before I hung up the phone, I said, "Do you have a Polaroid camera?" And he said, "Yes, I do." And I said, "Well, will you bring it?" And he said, "Yes, I will do that." So he came to my office to get the letter to take to Joe. And I said, "Here's your $20, and here's $100. And this is yours when you bring back a picture of Senator Joe opening this letter," because I knew Joe, and I knew that he would see it was from me and take it and toss it in the trash can. And that would not be the investigatory, energetic, joyful, tranquil result that I was aiming for. And he said, "Absolutely." You can imagine, in the early 80s, and he does this for $20, how much $100 would mean. So I was pretty confident, and yes, in about an hour he came back, and there was a picture of him in his gorilla suit, and sort of standing over Joe, and Joe had the angriest look on his face. It was so classic, but he was in fact opening and reading my letter. And that picture stayed on my meditation table for a long time, many years, because it reminded me of how to bring practice into my life and how not to stay stuck in the bitterness and anger of events that happen in just the way life is, because we all have so much unconsciousness around us. And even though we might work to wake up and bring mindfulness to our life, not necessarily those around us are doing that. So if we bring mindfulness ourselves, regardless of what's happening, and we investigate our contribution to those situations, that will bring energy to us. The energy that's necessary to get us unlocked from the difficulties and conflicts where we're caught with another. And that unlocking will bring relief, joy, rapture, piti in Sanskrit. And that piti, as I experienced it, every time I looked at that picture, and knew that I had communicated with him from my heart in the best way I could to bring peace between us, that brings tranquility. The same in your practice, the same off the cushion. Let's sit for a minute. The wonderful teacher of many of us, Joseph Goldstein, at IMS outside of Boston in Massachusetts, in teaching about tranquility, writes, "It is through this tranquil factor of mind that we open up to the rapidity of the constantly changing universe. Through practice, we come to realize that we are the process of change. Impermanence, we are the change. We are not a self-observing change. We are the process of change. As our mind becomes more tranquil, we can experience non-separation from the flow of change. We see that there is actually no self standing apart from that change. Rather, what we call self is the process of change. The more we relax into this play of change, the more present in our life we become, the more we let go into our life just as it is." Thank you very much for your kind attention and your presence tonight. I've enjoyed being with you.